The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on January 5, 2020. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you all today. Well, I hope you had a good holiday season. This year I received a gift. It had some pictures with it, and very beautiful pictures. And this one particular picture had this little quote. Well, each picture had a quote with it. And this one is by, well, I'll just read it first and I'll tell you who said this. It said, "The world is a looking glass and gives back to every person the reflection of their own face. The world is a looking glass and gives back to every person the reflection of their own face." And this was by William Makepeace Thackeray, who I hadn't really spent any time with. I remember him somehow from my childhood. I'm not sure why or how, but William Makepeace Thackeray. And this time it struck me, that middle name, Makepeace. Isn't that a wonderful name? Makepeace. Very nice. But anyway, it's the quote I'm interested in here, where he said, I better read it again. Actually, I didn't quite quote it the way he wrote it. What he had was, "The world is a looking glass that gives back to every man the reflection of his own face." But of course, he was writing in a time when, well, that was kind of the standard language. But really what he's saying, it gives back to every person. The world is a looking glass that gives back to every person the reflection of their own face. Perhaps we could say there's some truth to that. It would seem so. This image of a mirror, a looking glass or a mirror, is very common in Zen. We have it in our teachings in many places. We have the story of Huineng, the sixth patriarch of Zen in China, the fifth patriarch wanting to pass on his teaching, his lineage to the next generation, just said if anyone could write a verse that really pointed to the truth, spoke the truth, then they would be ripe for the Dharma transmission. And of course, everybody's looking to the head monk, as the story goes, who felt then pressured to write something, but not having the full courage just to write it out and claim it, he wrote it on a wall. It went something like, the body is the Bodhi tree, the mind a mirror bright. Hour by hour we brush it clean so that no dust alight. And then of course Huineng came along and said, there is no Bodhi tree nor stand of mirror bright. Since all is empty, where can dust alight? So we have that story. I'm not going to get into that here. But that's kind of at the very foundation of Zen, the Zen lineages that came from Huineng. So it's a very common image. We also have it in other teachings. In our chant books, we have the Song of Jewel Mirror Awareness. We don't recite it very often. I've spoken from it a couple of times, but I don't know. After thinking about what I was thinking for this talk, I don't know, maybe we should, I should find a way where we can recite that from time to time. Maybe I can insert it on Friday nights or something, I don't know. The problem that I have, I've never really favored this particular image of the mirror, because there are, it seems to me, easy ways that we can misinterpret and misunderstand what is going on with that image. But on the other hand, it's very, very good. It's very powerful in many ways, and also could be very, very helpful for us. So this image of the mirror. And as Thackeray is saying here, calls the world a mirror or a looking glass that gives back to us our own reflection, the reflection of our own face. Yeah, perhaps we could say the reflection of our true face. Well, in the poem, the Song of the Jewel Mirror Awareness, in that, well, this idea, this image of a jewel mirror, or just the image of a mirror alone. At the recent sessions, I've been giving talks from this Zen teacher who we haven't really explored. I haven't really explored him much. But he uses the Hui Hai is his name. And he has some teachings regarding this mirror, this image of a mirror. And he points out in this particular book that I've been teaching from at Sessions, he points out that this image of the mirror is to kind of show that, you know, a mirror just presents us with the world. Thackeray says the world is a mirror. The mirror just kind of presents us with the world as it is, without distortions. It doesn't have any, doesn't hold any image of its own. It's a reflection. It just reflects what is appearing there before the mirror. And often this is associated then with the mind, and the mind is spoken of in this way. Was it your mind, or is the world itself mind? And what is that? Is it a mirror that's just reflecting what shows up? So there's difficulties with using this image, and that's why I haven't used it very much. I mean, but though we could certainly clarify all this and lay it out in distinct terms. And perhaps I might be talking about that a little bit right now. But in this image then of the mirror, the idea behind it is, like in the case of the jewel mirror, it doesn't distort anything. It just presents what's there, shows it to us, reflects it back to us, just what this is. And if you were to look into this mirror, you would see the jewel mirror. You would see your true nature in that reflection. But of course, we also know about mirrors that they can distort and change things in the image that we see. Even in just looking in a standard mirror, you know, you probably all have noticed this. Where is that you really in the mirror? Is that your image? You know? Well, you're probably right-handed, or maybe some of us are left-handed, but you're either right or left-handed. But if you look carefully at the person in the mirror who's ostensibly is you, your reflection, whatever you are, if you're right-handed, that person is left-handed. You've noticed that? So we think, well, is it a distortion? Then what's going on here? Why is it flipping left and right like that, we might ask? So is it really giving us a true image of what's being reflected there? Well, actually, it is. And if you notice carefully, it doesn't flip top and bottom. It's just right and left. Isn't that strange? You know? But is it really a switch between right and left? Is that really what's being switched? Here's my head up here, and I look in the image in the mirror, and yeah, the head's on the top, you know, and then my neck or chest is, you know, down here, and the same thing in the image. That doesn't seem to be flipped, but then when I raise my left hand, well, the reflection is raising their right hand. Well, that's what we think, but actually, if we stop saying left and right, and we just say east and west, you know. Something like this. If you're standing before the mirror, you know, and you're looking, you just happen to be facing east, or let's say you're facing north, well, then your left hand, you just raise your left hand, but it's your west hand. We don't have to say left. I mean, it's of course very convenient for us to say left and right, but it's really the west hand. And if you look in the mirror, it's still the hand that's on the west, to the west, and you know. That's what's being reflected. So that isn't really being flipped at all. There's just this abstract notion that we have of left and right. And if you lift your right hand, of course, then there's the eastern hand. You know, in reality, if you're looking north, you know, this would be on the east. And then that's what's being reflected back, is the eastern hand. So it isn't really east-west that's being flipped at all. We say left-right, and then that. But there does seem to be something flipped. Because the person in the mirror, I'm left-handed, I'm raising my left hand, they're raising their right. Something is flipped. But what? Is this a distortion of what we're seeing or what's being reflected? What's being flipped? Well, actually, what's being flipped is that you're facing the person in the mirror and the person in the mirror is facing you. That's what's being flipped. It isn't the up and down, you know, direction or the east-west direction. It's the forward and back direction is being flipped. So it's like the person in the mirror now, they have turned around and now they're facing you. And of course, it's your right hand, you know, and their right hand. But as they turn around and face you, now their right is on your left. So it works very handy when we're driving our cars. We can all just say, keep to the right. You know. So if we all do that, even though we turn around, we're still on the right, and we can pass each other. You know, you understand all that. But that's what's being changed there. But most of us really don't catch that. We don't realize that that's what's being flipped, is the dimension going right through the mirror. You know. From your face, through the mirror, through the face of that person being reflected back. That is what is being flipped. Not left and right, or east and west, and up and down. So I'm bringing this up just to say that. So if we use an image of a mirror that's reflecting back, we have to be careful there, because something might not necessarily be this true image that we have of ourselves or what it is we think we're looking at. Now, the last time I spoke here on a Sunday, I just took some questions. It was a while ago, and I'm sure not all of you were here, but a question came up. It was brought up by Linda. She had asked that if everyone was awake, if everyone were enlightened, wouldn't that be boring? Well, and what I said was no. But then I gave some poor responses. Well, one of the responses I gave, buried in it, was I didn't really bring it out. And that's why I'm talking about this image of the mirror now. But what I pointed out was that, everything, you know, why would it be suddenly boring now? It's the same as it is right now, if everyone were awake. Of course, first of all, that would never happen, that everyone would be awake. But were that the case, it wouldn't be boring, at least not to those who are awake. And if that's everyone, well, then it would. But nothing has changed, in a sense. Nothing has flipped or turned around. We might imagine, maybe, with enlightenment, boy, everything must turn around. Everything must be different. Wouldn't it, like the whole world, then just become, what, boring? Everything would become boring? Well, we're still in this world of birth and death, coming and going. This hasn't flipped. This hasn't changed. Still, it might seem that something has flipped and changed. So what might that be? Because I did say, wouldn't it be boring? And I said, no. Just to put it into a word. I should have left it at that, but but I tried to say a little more. But this is something worth exploring a little bit. Because we might have the image, maybe, that with enlightenment, everything will change. Well, in a sense, everything does change, except nothing changes. It's like something has flipped, and yet at the same time, it doesn't seem like anything has really flipped. We're still here in this world. Still, it looks like the same place. We do allude to this in various ways. We have the image of, you know, the banquet with the demons walking around and the sticks and all this kind of stuff. And if we don't understand where we are, the demon, you probably know the story. I'm not going to go into it here, but so the demons are walking around behind us and beating on us. You know, if we don't understand, yeah, because we're trying to eat our dinners with these long forks and we have to keep our hands on the end, you know, and the forks are too long so we can't feed ourselves. And it's very frustrating. We have all this food and yet we can't really eat it. But if we just cinch up on the fork now so we can kind of get the tines there to our mouth, that's right, but not, that's when they start beating on you. So you have to keep your hands. Well, it ends up that what we discover is that we can just feed the one across from us, and they'll feed us. We feed, you know, because we can do that with our long forks. Of course, be careful. You want to hit the mouth there, and not the eye or something when you're doing that. But anyway, but that's that story, and it's just a matter. I mean, so in the first place where the demons are walking around hitting you, it's kind of a hellish place. And that's the place where we are when we're confused, we're not awake. This place here can seem kind of hellish. And that can oscillate as to what degree of hellishness it is. Of course, for each of us in our own individual lives, that can fluctuate and change. But even in our society or the world at large, I mean, look at right now. Are we about to enter into World War III, or what is happening here now? And of course, then there's, on top of that, there's the environment, the climate that is collapsing, and all sorts of things are happening and threatening. So it's a very kind of a hellish existence. And that's kind of represented by these, you know, demons, you know, walking around behind us because we don't know how to eat properly. But were we to finally understand the situation we're in, that we're all in here together and we can work together and help each other and feed each other, all of a sudden it becomes a very heavenly place. Plenty of food, everything's. And the same situation for us here. If we don't understand this world, if we're seeing it as if, you know, we're not dealing with the actual world itself, but as an image in a mirror, and we don't understand that there's something subtle that has been flipped in this picture that we don't readily pick up and see. We will conduct ourselves and live in this world in a way that just doesn't match the reality. And we're turning left when we mean to go right, and it is sort of thing. And but if I can extend the analogy in that way, but it's, you know, I think you can kind of get the sense of what I'm aiming at here. And that is where we are in this world. And much of the huge problems that seem to be coming down on us right now, what potential war or the collapse of the environment, and it goes on and on, all sorts of other, these are things that we, human beings, create and have created. That's coming out of our not understanding where we are and how this world functions, how it operates, how it works, and how we can work with each other and get along with each other and live together. Were we to understand this more properly, this could become a beautiful jewel, a blue jewel hanging in space, this planet. All the wonderful things that it generates, that's generated here through nature. We feel like we have to get in and control everything, but it was nature. Nobody was controlling that. That even produced us in the first place. And all the luscious fruits and vegetables and the bounty of the earth and all of this and the beautiful skies and the clear streams and the azure blue oceans and whatever. We didn't create that. But we have developed, we have evolved, we've come out of this world. Well, we're still in it. But having developed these powerful intellects that we have, these minds, these human minds, and you know, our prehensile hands and stereoscopic vision, all this, and we have such control in our minds that can think and abstract our experiences here and transmit our knowledge, you know, that learned by individuals to other people and pass it along from generation to generation. This is where we are. But we have developed those abilities without understanding the true nature and the place of where we are right here now. And without this kind of understanding, missing something that is here in this picture, in this reflection of ourselves in the mirror, not seeing what is actually being reflected back. As a result of this, we live in a pretty difficult place. Needlessly, really. But were we to see this, well, if everyone were awake, I don't expect this, but we wouldn't have created this place in the first place. Not this hellish place. If we can describe it, it's also a beautiful place too, right along with the hellishness of it. But that wouldn't have happened. But even within this world as it is unfolding now, with all the terrors that seem to be lurking here and there and do erupt here and there, as well as the beauty and the kindness, you know, and the compassion and friendliness and helpfulness, all of that, that also can be found here. We're here in this place with awakening, with finally seeing what appears to be flipped in the picture, but understanding this as an appearance and understanding what that reflection actually means in terms of where we are here now. This would be a much different place. But that can go on right here with you. If you yourself wake up to what is really being seen right here in front of you, felt and thought and heard and tasted, you really see and hear and feel this as it is, not as a subtly flipped image of some sort that's distorted. This is what awakening is. You wouldn't have this problem that we otherwise taste and are vexed by and all of this. The reason you wouldn't have this, and by the way, then it wouldn't be boring. What we're talking about is actually seeing, maybe now for the first time, what is actually taking place here. As it acts, not as it appears in some kind of flipped sense that we can't quite figure out and understand. It doesn't even make sense. It's a subtle thing that seems to be different. I can't even figure out what's different about it exactly, except I can. This can all change. And you can live at ease in the world, even as it appears in some aspects, very hellish. This is for you to wake up to find, to recognize what it is that you see, what it is that you hear, what it is that's taking place in this world. This is what we're talking about here now, then, is what it's really, this is the jewel mirror that's reflecting back to us actual image of what is taking place. It isn't like the mirrors of our minds, or like if we are each, our own mind is a mirror or whatever, and it's reflecting things. Well, that is going to be all kind of distorted in various ways, in subtle ways. But there's no reason that it can't also just reflect the reality that is being shown us all the time. And were you to see this, to know, to understand this, to realize that this is your direct experience, if you could see it, know it for what it is, you wouldn't have these vexations that otherwise can be extremely disturbing, frightening, terrifying. Of course, the reason you wouldn't have these experiences is not because you wouldn't have these experiences if they're gone or something, or they don't affect you. That's not it at all. That's a distorted image. That's a distorted hearing, though, of what I've just pointed out, if you're thinking that's what I'm saying. Because that isn't really what I'm saying. Can you tell what I'm saying before it gets distorted in your mirror? You flip that image in some way, and you'll hear me saying something like that. That you can live free of the... Because then we get the idea that, okay, so I'm going to do this practice, I'm going to take up meditation, I'm going to do all this, so that I can become enlightened, that I'll have this mind then that, you know, so I won't feel these vexations and things like that. But that isn't at all what I'm saying. You can easily take what I've said and see it that way. And that just kind of matches our ordinary understanding of things out of our own little mirror here that's distorting and flipping and not really seeing what is actually being presented here. But what it is, if we can just, you know, gaze upon the world as it's, to use that image of a reflection, which I don't really like at this point, but and to see this for what it is, your vexation, the personal stuff, it doesn't have to be vexed in any particular way, because that is seen as a distortion. That is seen as something flipped or created that is actually false, that is actually not in the image. What is in the image, so I have to go back to that original, like, as if left and right are flipped, or there's something flipped there, you know. But it isn't. It's really east and west, and they're not flipped. And if we could see in that way, what we'll end up seeing is that this strong sense that we have of myself is not there. When it's seen properly, it isn't the thing that's governing everything, that drives us, that all of our calculations and what we want to do and what we think we should do. Even when we take up this practice and I should do this and I should do that and I should, you know, it should look like this and look like that, and whatever. All of that kind of thinking really can stop. It certainly doesn't have to drive you. If little echoes of it show up here and there, you see it for what it is. And you don't need to follow that or live out of it for very long. Because you'll also start to see that the moment you do, you're connected now to suffering, to dukkha, to the disturbance and this something. Once you see this, you're not going to be living out of that, at least not for long. You realize you're falling back into it, you can step out of it again. But that's kind of what's going on here with this. But because we don't leave this samsaric world, world of birth and death and coming and going and other people, and that there is suffering in the world and confusion and pain, and your heart goes out to that, to those that are so caught up and confused in this way, this will be anything but boring. And as for whether or not everyone became enlightened, this isn't... We live in muddy water. That's why we have that little teaching. May we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus. Purify our own mind. Except, of course, it isn't your own mind. It is a reflection of the actual reality itself, which isn't yours at all. But may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus, nothing surpasses the boundless mind. Thus we bow to Buddha, to awakening, expressed as a human being. I'm going to talk about the class I'll be teaching now starting tomorrow. We'll be looking into this, Buddha nature. The true nature of what is being presented here, what is lived out here. And be looking at that. And Dogen's understanding of Buddha nature, which runs counter to an awful lot of teachings that existed before his time. We'll look at these things in the class. But with this, we can come to realize just being settled down right here. Dogen expresses it as relinquishing your own views, relinquishing the images that you're holding in your own little mirror that has something perversely turned around, and you don't notice. You can kind of notice it, but you can't quite figure out what it is. What's turned? Something's wrong here. And it really is somewhat analogous to that left-right confusion in the mirror. We don't flip top-bottom, but it takes a while before we start to realize it's something we're not even considering. The depth, as we're looking through the mirror and back, is flipped. So there is something that's flipped there. But once we see that, actually, that's not even really flipped either. Of course, that's what we're looking at. It's that which we have been ignoring utterly until maybe we finally notice it. So, and that is an analogy. Don't take that to be a true representation of what it is that I'm pointing to. But there is something like this within our experience that we can finally settle down and see. And the settling down and seeing it is, well, it's just as what Dogen said. We relinquish our views. We don't hold them so tightly. They might come in handy for this and that in small ways. That's perfectly fine, as long as we don't mistake them for reality, that the world really is reflected in the way that we happen to think about it. It isn't. It's something subtly flipped in the way that we think about it. And of course, the way that we think, this too I'll say, you know, even the world of things and the world of coming and going, of course, that applies to things and it applies to thoughts and feelings. There's things, thoughts, and feelings, we say, we think. But if we really start to see this in an undistorted way, we will realize that there is just, can't really say, but I'll use the word thought. This is Buddhist thought. Buddhist thought is that all is thought. Of course, really, it's all is mind. But that even grasses and trees, as Dogen would say, you know, just this floor here, this cup, something that seems to be material and distinct and separate out there. This is a distortion of what is actually being presented. It is all thought, because if we, maybe I'm going too far with this for you now, but if we really look at what is there, even a material thing, or a feeling, or even a thought, as we conventionally think of a thought, there's nothing holding still there at all to be a thing, or a feeling, or even a thought. And this is what we can refer to as Buddhist thought, or as it is seen by Buddhas, by the awakened. And it can all be treated or understood, or we can be released from in the same way, whether we're talking about the physical reality or the mental reality, whether it's a feeling or thought. It is all of the same nature. And the Buddha nature is, with the Buddha added to that, we have a human element being brought in there, and also understanding, realization, enlightenment can come together with that. We'll be kind of looking at this in the class on Buddha nature. Not so much directly what I just said now, but in other ways. Okay, well, maybe I've said enough this morning. I'll stop if you have any questions. But just to sum it up, no, it wouldn't be boring.
People aren't.
Well, it's sometimes things get a little feel that way, but then that's when you're starting to be pulled back into your own ego. It's more, I don't want to say disappointing, because it's not exactly that either, but it's like a deep desire that is being unexpressed. The desire for everyone to awaken, or, you know, when you see the suffering in others, you want to help them to see their way out of that. And it is a matter that they could see their way out of it. And it is just that, that if you see your way out of it, you're out of it. And it has to do with dropping your views for that person and for yourself too. Because if you start to get disappointed or frustrated or whatever the word, it's because you're starting to pull yourself back into something here. But if you really have tasted this, you know what you can see what you're doing now, and you can let that disperse again. This can just keep coming and going for not care. But until we really know that and can see that happening, we know what that is. And then of course, and what you want is the world is just full of suffering and pain and sorrow and terror and fear and anger and just endless. And you want to relieve that, So I don't know what the word is exactly. It is a kind of there's Avalokiteshvara, who hears the cries of the world, and she's the bodhisattva of compassion. This is what true compassion is, to hear that, to feel this, to see this. Maybe to act in a way that can alleviate some of that suffering. That will be the tendency that's there. But what is interesting, it is not if we truly see this, it is not personal suffering. So in that way, and it's not exactly frustrating or, it doesn't hurt you personally in a sense, in some way. But it's, in other ways, it's even more, it's sort of like all-pervading. It is the muddy world that we're in, and we can't escape it, but we're no longer looking to clean up the muddy water. You can't clean up the muddy water. But what we can, each one of us, we can find our way out of it. And so that is maybe the effort, just to try to point this out. It's very subtle. There's different ways to point. And then there is this practice of learning to settle your mind. Bring it back. Have it go quiet. Start to learn how, to do that. And then to carry it out. And that's what we can encourage. That's what we can say. And it isn't a matter of that we must make the water clear. We're not going to make it clear. I don't want to say that we're not going to make it clear, because maybe so. I don't want to say that you're never going to win the Powerball, because I say that, and the next thing you're going to win it, So even though the odds are very much against it. But that isn't really the case, and that isn't really our job. Of course, our job isn't really anything at all, in a sense, other than just see if we can live out of awakeness, out of enlightenment, to make that effort, and to forget about that I'm going to do this for myself. I want to just live out of this, and forgetting yourself. Because if you don't forget yourself, you're never going to taste this. So you have to just learn to let that go. It'll come creeping back in from time to time. Start to see that, and we get angry about something, and pretty soon, but we're getting some delight. I want to be angry. We start to relish our anger or something. Well, watch for things like this, because this is going to keep you locked in pain and confusion. So if we really start to see that, it took me some time. Kadagiri Roshi, he used to say, watch your mind, settle your mind, calm down, calm your mind. Pat yourself. He'd go like this, tap his head, just pat your head. Things like this. And I didn't take him too seriously at first when he would make these kinds of remarks or pointings, But at some point, I started to realize, you know. And we also talk, we have this meditation of Shikhan Daza, Shikhan, you know, one of this is tranquility, this settledness, this quietness. We need to start to realize that this is something, I don't want to say it's important, I don't want to build it up in any way at all, but it's a necessary component. And we need to, you know, to learn to start to find that. And it's not even to find it. It's there. If we just stop, that's where we go. It's right there. It's the natural home. That's the nature, the Buddha nature. That's just the true nature. Is it to be settled in that way? To be awake, enlightenment is just natural. All of this. It's just that, but we'll disturb it. So it's really a matter of, don't try to settle yourself. You can't do that. That you're disturbing yourself as you're trying to make yourself settled. Just become settled. Recognize the importance of it. And the way to recognize, you know, or to do that is to recognize when you're disturbing your own mind, let alone other people. Don't disturb them in, because if you disturb them, that's going to disturb your mind too. But we have to recognize this. Recognize how the world actually works. And if we're really interested in this, you know, you can find these ways that will help for your mind to settle. And you don't need to do anything active to settle your mind. You just stop doing these other things that take you away, that take you out of it. So we can do that. And this is an ongoing thing in this muddy world. And so it isn't boring. It isn't like, I'm done now, that's it. That's not it. That's not it at all. It's constant kind of, I don't want to say work. That sounds like drudgery now or something, but it isn't that. It's just living out of this, but it's really getting to know the importance of this, not disturb yourself or others. We have the precepts not to intoxicate yourself or others. And we think, well, that has to do with drinking. But it has to do with this. Don't get them fixed on their own little piece of anger. You know that they'll get angry over this, and so maybe you want to just stir that one up. Don't do stuff like that. Just start to recognize if there's any little thing in you that goes in those directions. Start to spot where they are and see if you can recognize what that is. And that's just going to keep you locked in misery and confusion. It's the opposite of awakening, living out of awakeness. If you're really serious about this, if you've had enough of the pain and the suffering and the confusion, well, this is what we need to do. Dogen describes it as relinquish your views. Not necessarily the conscious views and the beliefs and things that you hold, those too, of course, but this other stuff too. The way you're kind of looking at, well, you know, he bugs me, so I'm going to do something to bug him. Just don't do those things. Never mind that person now in this regard. That's the way we should never mind other people. And the way that we should attend to other people, we ignore that, but this way that we tend to go for, you ignore that and recognize that that is you. Because that disturbance you're going to create, that you're living it. That's what you're living out of. Let's just start to recognize this. And when we do, little by little, as we start to realize what putting your hand into the flame is, you're going to stop putting your hand into the flame. Of course, now in the case of putting your hand into the flame, we know instantly, and we just don't do that. You know? Except we also live our lives in such convoluted ways. We're twisting our arm into a confined space or something, and all of a sudden it gets into the flame or whatever, and we don't even realize, you know, all of a sudden my hand now is hurting, and I don't understand why. So it's kind of like that. But it really is this matter of start watching the ways in which we needlessly disturb ourselves and others and perpetuate the misery and the suffering of the world and destroy our environment and on it goes. Create war, but also create conflicts within our interactions with others and things like that. It just isn't worth it. It isn't worth it. Whatever we're holding ourselves out for, the buffer our own ego and to give ourselves some little delight or whatever. It isn't worth it. I discovered at some point, I want to live out of awakeness. I don't want this other stuff. I haven't mastered it by any means, but, you know, because I'll still catch myself slipping into, you know. But better, little by little, we can get better at this. And our lives can become calmer and more sane. And along the way, too, we can actually realize what the awakening is. Even there, we can still slip a little. But that's really what this is. And we just come back to this and come back to this and come back to this. And practice it over and over and over again. It's not boring. Especially when the release of the great pains and the unsettledness of mine and the deep vexations and the deep disturbance. Even when things like the world we're living in today, folks, all of us, we're sliding toward who knows. It's looking pretty big with the environment and the kind of political leadership that we have here in the world today and where that's all slipping and sliding. And I'm not talking about any one particular point. But this is all coming out of human delusion and confusion. But you yourself don't need to be. We're in this. You're not going to escape any of that. But you don't need to yourself be caught and torn with every little thing that's coming. You can finally at last, long last, learn to be settled. I discovered this many years ago when I found out I had cancer. And I was told that I probably wasn't going to live more than a couple of months. I was 32 years old. But I could, by that time I had learned this settled mind. I knew what this was. And I was able to begin to practice that. I was right up against something. Life and death right in the face. Every morning waking up, the first thing that was on that came to me was, your life is almost over. Of course, that was a mistake. It wasn't almost over. I'm now 74, so. But still, that's going to come for all of us one way or another. But more than that, we can learn to live differently. And it wasn't like when I finally realized this, I suddenly was living all that much different. But I was to some degree. But I kind of knew what the assignment was, what I needed to do was to watch my own mind, to settle my own mind. And little by little, you know, we can get better with this. And along the way, we can learn some other things that might be helpful for others. So, but again, it's hardly boring. There's probably time for another. Is that okay, Linda? Okay. Yeah.
So for years and years, I would look at pictures of myself, photographs, and kind of not really like them. Because it kind of like, it doesn't really capture what I look like, what I think I look like. And it's like, it took a lot of years for this kind of epiphany where I realized that day by day, morning by morning, I've been brushing my teeth, looking in the mirror, and combing my hair, and looking in the mirror, and day by day building up this picture of what it is that I look like, and carrying it around with me. And suddenly it occurred to me that, well, what I think I look like is actually this mirror image of me. And so that I'm seeing pictures of myself, and all of the features are flipped. I'm not even noticing what's looking off. It's all these slight asymmetries are just different and coming at me in a different way. And so I'm carrying around this picture in my head, this image, this mental image of what I look like, that's actually just my mirror image. So what I actually look like is the mirror image of that mirror image. And it's just like, you know, that's probably 30 years old before I put that together. And it's just kind of vertiginous to think about that no, when other people look at me, they're not seeing that picture that I have in my head that I'm getting from just looking in the mirror. They actually know those pictures are right, that I think are wrong. The photographs are actually more or less getting it. That's bizarre to figure out. It's obvious when you realize that this is like, oh yeah, okay. So it's been flipped in my mind the whole time.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think for a lot of us, you know, that's kind of how it is. We go along and we don't, you know, realize things like. I heard of one guy who, whatever it was, he parted his hair on one side or the other, and thought he looked okay in the mirror. But at some point, when he ended up flipping the part to the other side, all of a sudden he became a much more popular fellow and things like that. But though he himself didn't like the image he saw now, but other people were seeing what he used to see. You know, it was something like that. Anyway, wasn't that Robert Burns? He says, what is it? The gift he gives. To see ourselves as others see us, yeah.
The gift he gives me to see myself as others see.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, or just to see ourselves as others see us, I think is, you know, but to see myself, yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay, well, is there anything else?
There would be a lot less drama if we were all enlightened.
Well, yeah, but there's still volcanoes, you know, things like that. Actually, there's a lot more to what I just said, because actually there aren't. And that sounds weird. So don't take that, what I just said. Just scratch it. I'll end it right now. Yeah, drama, I don't know. Do you want drama? As long as we have bodies, there will be things going on. And, yeah, so I don't think we have to worry about that. And there will be drama. So... And loved ones will still die and things like this. So, but to wake up to what this really is, we'll take care of any kind of personal vexation that you have, mainly because you're not seeing things in those terms at all. And you'll realize that there's an illusion that had previously fixed you, you know, on that. Anyway, enough of that, including the volcano, but never mind. I'm wandering off into places that I would have to spend a long time explaining what I just said, so I better end it. But thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.